Week 8 of the college football season is officially in the books, and with that comes another episode of the College Tribe Podcast, episode 11 to be exact. I'm your host, as always, Austin Price, and this podcast is brought to you by ESPN Pensacola, 99.1 FM, 1330 AM. You can also listen to ESPN Pensacola on your mobile app of the same name. And of course, if you want to find other episodes of this podcast, including this one, you can go to the local podcast page at ESPNPensacola.com. Alrighty, very loaded slate here today. I always say that, but doesn't mean I don't mean it any less. We'll get started with the AP Top 25 for you, particularly the Top 10. As always, you know the drill by this point. Man, we got a new number one, don't we? Number one, Oregon. Number two, Georgia. Number three, Penn State. Number four, Ohio State. Number five, Texas. So that's where they fell. Number six, Miami. Number seven, Tennessee. Number eight, LSU. Number nine, Clemson. Number 10, Iowa State. Some of those teams floating around towards the bottom. You know, they're good teams. We're not really giving them much love. It's just like, hey, you're the teams that deserve to be there the most at this time. Don't necessarily look at them as contenders. We don't look at Iowa State as a contender. We don't look at Clemson really as a contender after Georgia manhandled them in week one. And they're playing in the ACC, which is especially weak this year. But, you know, nonetheless, they're there. Happy to have you. Okay. One of the biggest takeaways that I had from this top 10 is Texas staying above Miami. For those who are not aware, and if you're not aware, I wouldn't know why, but Texas hosted Georgia. It was supposed to be one of the games of the year, and Georgia didn't really make it much of a game. It's not like it was some total blowout, but Georgia was considerably the better team. Went into Austin and won 30-15 over the Longhorns. Georgia's easily the toughest team Texas has faced so far this year, but to have a double-digit home loss to your toughest opponent and to stay above an unbeaten Miami who has one of the best offenses, one of the most electric offenses, and one of the most electric QBs, I mean, that I think that's kind of shocking. To keep Texas ahead of them after a double-digit home loss, I mean, your best wins, if you're Texas, your best wins are over Michigan and Oklahoma. Neither of them are ranked. You face Georgia, a win that would actually hold some merit, some value, and you got beat up on your own field, but you're still ahead of Miami. I'm making this out as if it's very controversial. I'm sure to some people it is, but the reason why I in particular bring it up is because I agree with it. I love this from the AP voters. I ripped the voters to shreds last week with how they placed a couple of their teams. But when I look at this, I'm thrilled. Because that tells me that the AP voters are seeing exactly what we're seeing when it comes to Miami. As I said, Cam Ward's great. The offense is great. But the defense is unwatchable. And as a result, the Canes keep skating past flawed teams in high-scoring affairs. We got more on how they did against Louisville a little bit later. But they have to prove that they're for real, and they simply haven't. And that's what keeps teams like Texas ahead of you. The rest of the top 10 is also fine, in my opinion. So, all things considered, not bad, AP. You kind of redeemed yourself this week, at least with the higher end. But these are other shifts in the poll from 11 to 25 as well. These are other shifts that caught my eye. Alabama dropped to 15th. They dropped 8 spots. Now, mind you, I was laying into the AP with Alabama being 7th. It's not like I thought they should have been significantly lower, but I thought it was weird that they were kind of getting special treatment after squeaking past South Carolina. They lost to Tennessee, one of the toughest teams they've faced this year. It's their second loss, I believe. The fun fact that was swirling around was it was Alabama's first time having multiple losses before November since 2007. That was Saban's first year at the helm in Tuscaloosa. So for them to drop 8 spots to 15th, I'm all for it. The Tide have 2 losses now, of course, and one of them's to Vandy. And Vandy's ranked officially. We'll touch more on that in a little bit. But obviously Vandy is not some star-studded, oh my gosh, this team's just so tough. No. I mean, Alabama, the precedent they've set and the precedent Vandy has set, many people would argue Bama under zero circumstances should ever lose to Vandy. So for them to lose to them, especially how they did, is ridiculous. And now that Bama has a second loss, and it was an ugly loss, I think the voters are now officially saying, hey, listen, you're not that good of a team. You're not that good. It's not that you're terrible, but you are not that good of a team. You are playing ugly. A lot of turnovers. Milrow, he's a turnover machine. I want to say he's thrown like 6 interceptions in his last 4 games. That doesn't even include the fumble he had, the pivotal fumble in the Vandy game. and they're very undisciplined. How are you going to have Tennessee commit 9 penalties for 95 yards and commit more? How are you going to have that team, who almost had 100 yards worth of penalty yardage tacked onto them, how are you going to have them be the more disciplined, the more composed team of the two? That's ridiculous. You can't play like that and win games. You're going to struggle. You're going to lose. And that's what Alabama's done. And that makes you a non-contender. So good on the voters. Don't go easy on Bama. You went easy on them last week, but you didn't go easy on them this week. Granted, Bama didn't leave you much of a choice, but at least you owned it this time and said, you know what, Bama, we got to bring the hammer down. We love you. I think that's become blatantly clear over the years, but it's just not there this year. The window's not shut for Alabama. It's not, I don't think, but it's close. It's thin. We'll touch more on that later because they've got one of the bigger games of this weekend as they host a ranked Missouri. How about that? All righty. Another thing I wanted to touch on, give Indiana some love, man. The Hoosiers are 7-0. They just moved up to 13th in the nation. They're ranked higher than Alabama. When's the last time in college football? I don't even know if it's ever happened. When's the last time we saw Indiana ranked higher than Alabama, even for just a week? But they beat a then one-loss Nebraska team, the toughest team they faced up to this point, 56-7. Indiana's main problem was, we haven't really played anybody. Well, you hosted a one-loss Nebraska, and you knew that this was an opportunity to send a message, to make an example, to try to tell people, hey, listen, we're not just feeding on the weak here. We are a darn good football team. I think it was Gus Johnson that put it best. He said, hey, look out, world. Indiana has a football team, and it can play, and it can. I'm not saying you're some title contender. I'm not saying you're going to, you know, beat Ohio State in a few weeks. But, man, you're looking phenomenal. Before that game, the Huskers' only defeat came from Illinois, a ranked Illinois, mind you, and that was in overtime. Especially now that Michigan has 3 losses, the only game that Indiana will be a visible underdog in will probably be that Ohio State game, so congrats to them. Then we've got SMU. Now, this isn't really like something that I think is some epidemic. I don't think it's really a big deal. I just think it's funny. SMU just beat the snot out of Stanford. I think the final score was 40-10, and they dropped. They dropped in the rankings. Now, the reason why I bring this up is because Notre Dame recently beat the snot out of Stanford. I think it was 42-7, 49-7, something like that. And they dropped in the rankings. So I don't know how much you have to beat Stanford by to earn some respect around here, but that phenomenon is getting laughable at this point. Heck, maybe there's a rogue Stanford grad or two amongst those voters that they're trying to reject the Cardinals' unfortunate reality. Who knows? But my gosh. It's just, as I said, that's pretty frivolous. That's just something kind of funny I noticed. But my Demon Deacons, I think we play Stanford this weekend. We got to beat them 100-0, I guess, to make an impact. Either that or they just might tack it as a loss. And then I mentioned this earlier, Vanderbilt. They are ranked. They're a good team. They're 5-2. And they're ranked like we all wanted them to be. I was one of the many that was on a soapbox last week saying, put these guys in the rankings. What's taking you so long? But that was before they beat Ball State 24-14. Mind you, that was a tied game at the start of the fourth quarter. I hate to say it, but it seems like they've killed a lot of their praise. You're 25th, good for you, but you now appear to have more people kind of doubting you than hyping you up. So that is just so Vandy. We're gonna like get all this love as like some underdog, all just to, we lost to Georgia State earlier in the year and we struggled with Ball State now. Only you could get into the rankings for the first time in what feels like an eternity and people be like, ah, geez, it's only a matter of time until they fall out. God bless them. All righty. I mentioned the Georgia-Texas game. Heck, we were talking about the number one team changing, so it was one of the first things we mentioned. But I want to touch on a couple of surrounding conversations regarding this game, starting with, what do I think the win says about each side? Georgia, Texas, oh my gosh, did Texas just get exposed? Is Georgia for real? First of all, we already knew Georgia was for real, and we knew that Georgia was going to be one of the toughest teams Texas faced all year. So this result, while I expected something different, and most people did, this is not some groundbreaking, earth-shattering outcome. It's not. I think Texas is still a good team. I do think the result says more about Georgia I think Georgia is the best team right now today. I think if you put them on a neutral field with the current top team, that's Oregon. I think if you put them on a neutral field, Georgia wins. So I do think Georgia's the best team. Oh, but Austin, how'd they lose to Bama? I don't know, dude. They own Bama owns them. What do you want from me? There's no other way to describe it. With how Alabama has collapsed and how Georgia has just redeemed themselves with this win over Texas, I don't know what you want me to say. I don't know how Bama beat Georgia. I don't know how Bama was up 28-0 on Georgia. It just happened. People like to talk about flukes. I think that's a fluke. I think if Georgia and Bama play today, Georgia beats the snot out of them. With how Milroe's playing, with how Bama's playing, just all in all, how undisciplined they are, oh my gosh, I think Georgia would run them off the field. But there's just something that strikes fear into their heart when they face the Tide. And the Tide came out swinging for that one. They knew they were slept on in that one, and maybe that was the difference maker. Because, I mean, Bama, they were favored to beat Vandy by a ton. They lost that game. They were favored to beat South Carolina by a ton. They almost lost that game. And they were favored on the road in Knoxville, in Neyland Stadium, and they lost. So maybe they just need to be doubted. Maybe I need to take Missouri, you know, minus 20. Maybe we just need to set that spread, and maybe Bama will return to their glory. Who knows? But anyway, in all seriousness, here's the other thing I wanted to talk about. I want to give my thoughts on the trash-throwing situation. So, let's paint the scenario here. It's Georgia, Texas. Georgia has the ball. Carson Beck throws an interception. It looked like a standard exchange between a wide receiver and defender. Any contact was mutual. It was very minor. Beck threw the pass behind his guy right to the defender. It looked pretty just par for the course interception. And Texas took it back, what, to the Georgia 9? It was something like that. And it was looking like a turning point because this was going to make it a one-score game, I believe, between Georgia and Texas. This was huge. If Texas scored on this possession that they just got inside Georgia's 10, we were going to have ourselves a ball game. But a flag was thrown. The officials said, pass interference, defense, number, whatever the Texas guy wore, 15-yard penalty, first down, Georgia. This had Daryl K. Royal Stadium livid. Livid. And fans are always going to be upset about stuff like this, but truthfully, you watch the replay, it was disastrous. It's one of the worst calls I've ever seen in my years of watching college football. It's one of the worst I've ever seen. It was so delicate, the exchange between this wide receiver and defender. And as I said, it was mutual. And it was clearly a pass. It was just thrown off target right into the Texas DB. And the refs called it PI. It's just, you had to see it. If you didn't see it, look it up. It was ridiculous. And this caused Texas fans to start throwing things onto the field. Throwing garbage. We've seen it happen before. I don't condone it. But here's where the controversy comes in. While Steve Sarkisian, Texas's head coach, was telling fans to stop throwing things, and while cheerleaders and crew were trying to get pieces of garbage and debris out of the end zones, the officials deliberated further and all of a sudden said, you know what? There was no PI. After further discussion, there was no PI. It will be first and goal, Texas. This made Kirby Smart angry, and this made a lot of people just around college football and college football media nervous. Because it was a matter of, okay, were you deliberating because the game was delayed from garbage? And were you influenced by the replay being shown on the Jumbotron? Mind you, that is not ethical at all. If the official changes their call solely because of the delay of game caused by the fans and because of the replay on the Jumbotron, that is not what a referee is supposed to do. That is very controversial if that's what happened. So everyone's losing their minds today, acting like integrity has been forever tarnished in this sport, and this is going to set a dastardly precedent, yada, yada, yada. Chill out. You want to know my takeaway from all this? Chill out. If you want to joke about they bullied the refs into changing the call, That's one thing, but the talk has grown so dramatic, thinking it sets some world-altering precedent. Here's the deal. Refs often deliberate after tricky calls, so we can't say with absolute certainty that there would not have been any further conversation over it, and we can't say that they looked at the Jumbotron. We can't say that either. But again, it was the worst call I've ever seen, so especially with it not changing the game's outcome, I don't really care if the garbage throwing was why it was discussed, just to be honest. But I'll throw in another thing. If the call was reversed out of confirmation from the replay, which that's what many believe, shouldn't the blame fall more on the refs? You're saying that, we're teaching a bad example with our fans. Fans have thrown garbage before, and they're going to throw garbage again. Do you remember Bottlegate? Wasn't that like the early 2000s, late 90s? Bottlegate between the Browns and Jags? The refs done goofed, and the Browns lost it. I'm not saying it's right, but it happens. I mean, I think this, you should just blame the refs for not being as ethical as they should be, assuming that they rode on that replay on the Jumbotron. And they may not even have done that. But if they did, that says more about the refs than anything else. And it's just like, yeah, you guys need a refresher on what's allowed and what you can do and what you can't. You violated the rules, yada, yada, yada. But I mean, that would be the worst case scenario. But just to sum this up, because I've been yapping about this for far too long, I never endorse littering the field. I never endorse delaying the game. But to sit here and pretend that such an act, which will surely happen again, has forever marred the integrity of both college football fandom and officiating, come on, man, that's a tad much. This is not a new practice. You're thinking Texas invented littering. No, they didn't. Get a grip. Alrighty, let's break down some Floridian representation here. I gave FIU some credit last week. I saw that they were playing on a Wednesday night, and I'm like, hey, you're playing winless UTEP, so I'll give you some love, thinking that you can get a win. You gave the Miners their first win of the season. So I gave you some love, and you let me down. You're playing Sam Houston as I speak, so you're not going to hear a second score prediction from them tonight, but you know what? They don't really deserve it. So that was kind of a bummer. USF, they came back from being down 19-7 to beat a one-win UAB team. Congrats, I suppose. The Bulls are now on a bye before taking a trip to FAU. Speaking of FAU, they've lost three of their last four games to fall to 2-5 on the year. So them also having a bye seems to be quite fortuitous. Keeping with the bye week theme, actually, Florida, they're on one after decimating Kentucky 48-20. Now, this is huge. This is huge for the Gators, and this is huge for Billy Napier, who may be in the midst of buying himself some more time in Gainesville. Think about it. The Gators now have four wins, and with FSU looking as bad as they are, it seems that we can tack on a fifth one. That means that between now and rivalry week, just one more win could make a bowl berth as good as clinched. Now, I don't know whom they'd beat, but a win over Kentucky, FSU, and someone else, surely respectable, to make a bowl game with the nation's hardest schedule. That seems worthy of buying a man at least one more year, right? I think you host LSU and Ole Miss. Those teams are good. They are not great. And they're late in the season. So I don't know. If Florida gets a win over one of them and they get a bowl game, you would have probably at least one ranked win. You would have competed with Tennessee on the road. Tennessee's looking good. You would have beaten Kentucky for the first time in a few years. And you would have beaten FSU. And would that game have been in Tallahassee? I think it is. That would be wonderful. At that point, I'm all for Napier having at least one more year. And then if he sucks then, well, it's like, okay, you just struck gold a couple times in 2024, so we're going to can you. But we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Right now, the Gators got to be pretty happy with where they sit. Someone who's not happy is UCF. They just lost a heartbreaker to the Cyclones, 38-35. A top 10 road dub was exactly what they needed to get back on track, but it just wasn't meant to be. It's not all bad, though, because they now host 11th-ranked BYU. So, assuming your performance in Ames wasn't a fluke, hey, Central Florida, this should be no more difficult to win. Maybe you can get this one. Here's to hoping you're not emotionally burnt out after the Cyclones thing. Alrighty, Miami, I mentioned this before. They were not looking too hot against Louisville. The specifics, though, 52-45. I told you they were all offense, no defense. 52-45. And mind you, that was a tight game, being decided by one or no possessions basically throughout the majority of the game. There were a couple times Miami, including late in the game, there were a couple times where Miami would get a double-digit edge, and then Louisville would close it out, and that's how they ended the game. Louisville's good. On the road, very nice. But 52-45, that's how a good team wins that game, not a title contender. However, Miami has good luck. They will now host FSU, so I think they'll be fine for at least one more week. I got that being a blowout. I've been riding on FSU really hard this season. Everyone has. And I am sorry that they are struggling like they are. I mean, who wouldn't be? But I kind of pick on them when it comes to Miami probably beating the snot out of them because FSU just lost to Duke for the first time ever. They fell to 1-6. In the loss, they scored no offensive touchdowns and turned the ball over several times. And it's just reminding us they have one of the ugliest offenses in the land this year. How am I supposed to look at them and think, yeah, they can outscore the Canes or even keep up with them? I mean, fat chance of that. So I'm sorry, FSU, but if you can't get a win over Duke, you ain't getting a win over Miami either. That just leaves West Florida, who, as expected, shined bright against Chouan, winning 35-6 to move up to 4-2 on the season. Argos are now back home to face Shorter, while UWF has three straight wins, Shorter has three straight losses, one of which was to Chouan. So, yeah, give me the Argos to keep that rhythm going. All righty. Score predictions. Woo, everybody. Hey, UWF going to beat the brakes off of Shorter. I got it being 41-14. I got UCF falling to BYU, unfortunately. Give me BYU 30-21, two-possession win officially. UCF, you're competing with these teams. Great, but I think it says more about their limits, not your greatness. Forgive me, but I think that's the truth. Miami, just to quantify how bad I think you're going to beat the Seminoles, 44-10. I know Miami's defense is struggling, but it's not like Duke's rushing defense was any good. And Duke's defense as a whole, their rushing defense, I've heard bad things about it, but their defense as a whole isn't probably great. And Florida State scored no touchdowns and turned the ball over four times, I think. Yeah, Miami's going to be just fine. 44-10, the final there. Alrighty, nationally here, just a quick hitter for you. I got number 4 Ohio State beating Nebraska 38-17. I bring this up because Nebraska's a 5-2 team. Ohio State hasn't really had much of a chance outside of Oregon to prove themselves. I think Ohio State struggles here. It's maybe like 24-17 late in the game, and then they pull away with a couple scores to get that 38-17 edge. Maybe. I don't know. But it's not an upset alert. We got those in a moment. Number 12 Notre Dame faces number 24 Navy. I believe this is in New York, I think. If it's not, it's near there. It is a neutral site game. That's all you need to know. I do have Notre Dame winning 31-21. Navy has done so much better against their competition. You know, they have done phenomenally, blowing out their competition. But it's a big leap from that to Notre Dame. And I say that even with Notre Dame losing to Northern Illinois. Notre Dame has always had Navy's number. This is one of the most lopsided rivalries, quote-unquote, in college football. I got Notre Dame, but they struggle a bit. Number 1, Oregon, takes on number 20, Illinois. It's in Autzen Stadium. I think Oregon wins. I think they win 32-14. I think the game at times feels closer than that. I think Oregon pulls away. It's not a knock on Illinois. You just haven't proven to me that you're great. Oregon's looking pretty darn good right now. I'll take the Ducks by 3 scores. Alabama and Missouri. Man, I do not feel good about this one. I've got Alabama winning 34-13, but the more I think about that score, the more scared I get. Alabama's at home, and I believe it's Alabama's homecoming game. But, and see, this is tough, because Missouri's pretty one-dimensional. But they're rushing, they ride heavily on their rushing attack and their rushing defense. If you can run the ball and stop them from doing so, which Alabama certainly has the physical talent to do, this is an easy win for Bama, I believe. But their rushing attack's been pretty limited in recent weeks. And if it was just better talent that won you games, you'd be unbeaten right now. No question. Except maybe a loss to Georgia. So I can't make heads or tails of you. I'm going to have to take... I'll take Alabama. I put down 34-13, but if Missouri covers that spread, don't be surprised. Texas traveling to Nashville to take on number 25 Vanderbilt. Who would have thought that Vandy would be a home underdog here as far as a potential upset alert in a ranked matchup? Hey, Texas still wins by 25. I got to be in 45-20. I'm sorry, Commodores. Once again, we're just talking about the limits of your team here. Texas is great. You're not. And Ball State reminded us of that. And then we've got Texas A&M and LSU. This is a sneaky good one. Texas A&M number 14, LSU number 8. The game's taking place in Kyle Field. Give me A&M 30-24. I got that being one heck of a game. Now we've got two upset alerts here. Number 17, Boise State on Friday night. They go to Las Vegas, take on UNLV. UNLV's only loss is to Syracuse, and I think Syracuse is only a one-loss team as well. They lost to Syracuse 44-41 in OT, right? So that's pretty good. UNLV is sneaky good. They're hosting Boise State. I can see that being a trip up for the Broncos. Ashton Gentry's phenomenal. The Broncos are ranked for good reason. They have quality wins, or quality performances at the very least, against Oregon and Washington State. So I will take Boise State to win the game. But, man, that could be a good one. And then our other one here, number 3, Penn State travels to Wisconsin. The Badgers are 5-2, and they're coming off of what was a pretty easy road win over Northwestern. I never know where to go with Wisconsin. They're good. And Luke Fickell's a good coach on paper. But sometimes they just horrendously underperform. But they're at home. Penn State has underperformed. I think that'll be a good conference matchup to watch if nothing else better is on. And this has been the College Try Podcast. I'm your host, Austin Price. Again, you can find this podcast on ESPNPensacola.com. It's local podcast page. You can see the College Try Podcast here on ESPN Pensacola. Thanks for tuning in, as you always do. I love you, and we'll see you next Tuesday. Good night.